Chapter 12. Pibor and the Merley beckon. We returned to the Sudan during the first part of 1957. We didn't know then that before our term was finished, we, like most of the other missionaries, would be expelled from the Sudan on short notice. The civil war, pitting black southern tribespeople, now either Christian or animist, against the Arab-Muslim northerner, was gaining momentum. In their efforts to forcibly Arabicize and Islamize the South, the Arab North would bring the country to disaster. And when it happened, we recalled the prophetic words of Dr. Glenn Reed, the wise missionary statesman of the United Presbyterian Church, who had predicted that the time was short and that at best we might have 15 years to work. We would be given less than 14. In 1959, the Hostetters left the Sudan, the first to be expelled. The following year, Levina and our family moved into the vacant Hostetter house in Pibor. We completed the Anuak translation there. We had scarcely finished when we began the work on the Merley. Paul had done the basic spade work in the language. We could build on his foundation. Even while Paul was still in the Sudan, he and I had collaborated on developing a writing system using Arabic symbols. Merley would be written using the Arabic script. Way back in 1954, while we were at Pokuo, more or less academic discussions were underway in the mission as to whether or not we might one day want to consider writing these Nilotic languages using the Arabic script. Arguments pro and con were common among us. Some thought we should actively pursue this possibility in view of the fact that one day most of the children in the schools would likely be reading and writing in Arabic. Why not build on that foundation? But could these Nilotic languages be written accurately using the Arabic letters, when in Arabic the consonants were accented, while in the tribal languages the accent was on the vowel? A fun experience with Arabic script. Years earlier, in my free time at Pokuo, I had done a little experimenting on the side. What I did was rather crude, but it proved a point. Anuak, which was one of the Nilotic languages, could indeed be written using Arabic letters. In my experiment, I used the Arabic consonants and simply used numerals from the Arabic for the various vowels. I had three young Anuak men who were my guinea pigs. Before too long, I was able to write unknown words in Anuak on the blackboard using Arabic letters. As I wrote the words on the board, they were able to call them back to me. We were having great fun. I decided at that time to ask the mission leaders for permission to prove my point at the mission meeting in Nasser in 1954. It was agreed, and I had these three men row downstream in a wooden canoe nearly 150 miles to Nasser, located on the Sobat River, into which the barrel flowed from Gambela. They gave me a half hour one afternoon for my presentation. The young men sat in the front row, and I was at the blackboard. I'd write an Anuak word on the board using the Arabic script. My young men could read virtually anything I wrote. After a half an hour, I had proved my point beyond dispute. The Anuak language, at least, could be written in Arabic script with a degree of accuracy that made reading as easy as when using the Roman alphabet. It was a fun afternoon. I felt that a number of my colleagues had been quite favorably impressed. When the young men left and made their way to the river to begin the tough rowing upstream toward home in Pokuo, the business meeting resumed. As we began, one of my colleagues, who didn't like the idea of using Arabic script no matter what, acknowledged, "Harvey has certainly demonstrated that these languages can be read using Arabic letters, but I remain unconvinced. The meeting will please come to order." It was all in a missionary's day, and we had a great good time with it. Years later at Pibor, the Merley would be written using Arabic letters. The only school for the Merley was run by the government. Because it was taught in Arabic, the Arabic script was the script the students knew. It made good sense to build on that foundation. Anyone already able to read Arabic could go on and learn to read in the vernacular written with these same Arabic symbols and a few modifications with relative ease. The argument against using Arabic letters because of Arabic's close association with the Quran remained. At Pibor, however, there was no choice. Merle would be written in Arabic script, or it would not be written at all. The decision had been made. It was for Arabic script. We purchased an Arabic typewriter, modified two or three keys, learned to type from right to left, and voweled it by hand. I made rapid progress with the Merle translation. My informant was completely bilingual in Merle and Anuak. We were using the Anuak translation as our basic text. Admittedly, this first translation was more of a living Bible-type translation. It seemed possible that the entire New Testament might be completed in less than 5 years. Our hopes were high. Assigned to Bishop Gwynn. The mission, however, was again short of personnel. Someone had to fill in at Bishop Gwynn Divinity College, where students for the ministry were being trained. The mission had wanted to assign us there on previous occasions, but we had always successfully escaped their threatened draft. The need to complete the Anuak translation always prevailed. This time, however, the Anuak New Testament was finished and being printed by the American Bible Society. Now was the perfect opportunity for the mission to send us to Bishop Gwynn, and it happened just as we had feared. We found ourselves on the staff at Bishop Gwynn College. The Merle translation was put in cold storage. We were told that our assignment was temporary until the need at Mundry could be met. We were not unduly unhappy. I felt it an honor to be teaching in this theological seminary. I worked night and day, as I had no old lectures on which I could rely. It was a great experience, and I suspect I could have been happy with a long-term assignment if the need for the Merle translation didn't exist. Return to Pibor, missionary expulsions. My career as a professor in a theological seminary was to be short-lived. At Mundry, we always had an early morning chapel hour, after which Levine and I had our breakfast. This particular morning, in December of 1961, I had no sooner opened the back door when Levine shushed me with upraised hand, saying excitedly, "Quiet, quiet! The Swarts and the Sycamas have been expelled from the Sudan." She had her head close to the shortwave Zenith radio, on which we could pick up the mission broadcasts. We couldn't talk, but we could listen in and keep in touch. We were shocked and dismayed. The axe had fallen. We had known this could happen at any time, but when the moment came, we could hardly believe it. Within the week, the mission asked us to return to Pibor to take up where Bob and Maury would leave off. Just before we left Mundry, our dear friend, Bishop Oliver Allison, Bishop of the Sudan, who was visiting Bishop Gwynn at the time, stood between Levina and me and, putting his long arms around us, lovingly committed us to the Lord for whatever he had for us in his tomorrow. We headed for Pibor. Bob and Maury had already disposed of most of their things among the Arab merchants across the river. Bob and I spent as much time as possible together so that I could learn from him all I could. We wanted to have good continuity with anything he had going at Pibor. We were overwhelmed with the responsibilities that would soon fall on our shoulders. The Swarts and the Sycamas had been given 30 days to leave. Their time was nearly up. 7 days to leave the Sudan. Bob and Maury still had one more day with us at Pibor when the entire picture changed. The MAF plane had flown into Pibor this particular morning. At noon, I was on the radio talking to Malakal. Milton Thompson was on the radio for the mission. He inquired, "Did you get my letter which I sent to you on the plane?" I responded that I hadn't opened the mail yet and wasn't sure whether his letter had come or not. With that, Milton said, "Well then, I better give you the bad news now. You have just 7 days to pack your bags." I could scarcely believe my ears. We, too, were being expelled from the Sudan. As soon as we'd returned to Pibor, the government officials realized that we had been missed because of our being at Mundry in another province. In no time, they corrected their oversight. The words were hardly out of Milton's mouth when I came back with, "Milt, there's no market for used furniture here at Pibor. Bob has flooded the market." I'll never understand why I said that. I suspect it was an effort to ease the searing pain with a lighthearted attempted joke. Putting all jokes aside, we knew that our ministry in the Sudan was finished. night had fallen. We wanted to cry, but there was no time. Even before we ate, Levina and I started moving boxes out of the attic. Sorting and packing had begun. We had our meal in silence. What did the Lord have in mind? What did the future hold? It would be months before some of the answers were in. During those months, we would learn what it is to lean on the Lord in a new way and to wait, and then wait again with patience. During those remaining rushing days at Pibor, there was one agonizing question that kept surfacing over and over in our conversations. It lay heavily upon our hearts. The Anuak New Testaments. How would we ever get them into the hands of the Anuak people? We knew that the American Bible Society had printed them, and that they were supposed to have been shipped, but we knew nothing as to their actual whereabouts. Where were they? How would they ever reach the Anuak people? With all the missionaries leaving, how could it happen? This was the constant, recurring cry of our hearts to the Lord. Our hearts were burdened and heavy. Milton Thompson and Rob McLaughlin came down to help us sort out our things, get rid of what we could, and start closing down the station. We carried out with us what two small MAF planes could carry. Milton and Rob packed up what would fit in an outboard and aluminum canoe to go out by steamer. A paddle-wheel steamer was coming from Malakal, but it could only get as far as the village of Lekwungali, about 25 miles north of Pibor. John Ducker, an MAF pilot, and Milton Thompson made the run with two small boats from Pibor to meet the steamer coming in from Malakal. The river was falling fast. This would be the last steamer before the dry season. But alas, on the trip downstream, to where the steamer was expected, the canoe got in the wake of the outboard and capsized in about 5 feet of water. The men fished the things out of the river, but by the time they arrived in Lekwungali, the steamer had already gone back toward Malakal. The only thing they could do was park our things on the riverbank near one of the Arab merchants' shops. There they cooked and steamed in the hot sun until the roads became passable, and a merchant's truck collected them to deliver them to the single ladies who were still working at Akobo. It was 3 months later before our water-soaked goods arrived in Akobo. The dear ladies did all they could, but the damage was done. They dried out and aired out what they could and repacked the whole lot for eventual transporting to Ethiopia. In October that same year, they arrived in Addis Ababa, where Levina and I were now living and studying Amharic in preparation, hopefully, for use in Ethiopia, if we could get a resident visa. Sometimes, with a bit of humor, we reminded ourselves that the Lord was teaching us to travel light. It was only 10 years earlier that we had lost everything when our house burned at Akobo. This time, we left most everything behind at Pibor. In less than 15 years, we'd again leave everything behind in Ethiopia. We were reminded that our citizenship is in heaven, and that here we have no abiding city. A last-minute baptism at Pibor. The last morning was hectic. Last-minute packing. People from the Arab shops across the river, coming out of curiosity to see what was happening. A few wanting to buy small things thought useful to them. Friends among the Merli and Anuak just wanting to be near us for a little while yet, before we'd be gone forever. Levina's letter to our home church in Silver Creek, Minnesota, dated January 5, 1962, beautifully describes the unforgettable impromptu baptismal service that took place during our last hours at Pibor. Quoting from the letter, "It was with tears in our eyes and aching hearts that we left our home, our work, and the people whom we had learned to love. As the little MAF plane flew us over the mission compound, it was hard to realize that we would never again return. It makes me sad to think of it. I guess I am like many other people that look so long at the door that is closed behind them, they fail to see the door the Lord is opening before them. The morning we left Pibor, I had to get away from the business and relax a bit. So I walked out to the village to say goodbye to some of my friends. I stopped to see Bur, Oshan's wife. She had come to Pibor this spring knowing nothing of the Lord and with a mother who is very much opposed to her son-in-law's new religion. Oshan, her husband, is a very dear Christian man. He is an Anuak and a tuberculosis patient in the hospital. Under Oshun's teaching, Bur came to love the Lord. While we were at Mundri, she stood up in the church and said she believed in Jesus and wanted to be baptized. At that time, Bob Swart told her that when Harvey returned to Peabor, she would be baptized. I could see that she was sad about something, and when I asked what was making her sad, this is what she told me. When you were away at Mundri, I told the people I believed in Jesus. Bom told me that when Odola, that's Harvey's African name, returned, I would be baptized. She went on, "Now you have come back, but today you are leaving, and you will never return, and I am not baptized." I went home and told Harvey. When he heard this, he said, "We'll stop everything and have a service right now." So we beat the church drum, called the people together, and had a most wonderful time of fellowship with the people that last morning. It was well worth the time it took. How I wish you could have seen Buddha's face when she left the church following her baptism. It was radiant, so different from when I saw her an hour earlier. It was a great joy to all of us. It is experiences like this that make it well worth the investment of our lives in a land like Africa. I praise God for the privilege that has been ours to serve in the Sudan these 14 years. In this same letter, Levina tells of the sadness felt at Peabor by the Merle that their New Testament hadn't been completed before we had to leave. She tells of Oshun's joy that the Anuite New Testament was finished. And then she says, quoting from the letter now, "As he praised God for this, a cloud came over his face, and he said, 'If only the Merle had it too.'" Levina's letter continued, "Yes, that has been our dream and prayer to give the Merle people the New Testament also. Konyi, a Merle elder, pleaded with Harvey to go somewhere, anywhere, he said, and translate the Bible for us too." End of quote. Levina's letter tells of those precious last hallowed moments at Peabor. The service of which he writes had barely finished when it was time to go across the river and fly out. God's perfect timing. It was midday, January 10, 1962. The two small MAF planes had just landed at Peabor. A number of our Anuak and Merle friends were there with us at the door of the plane when it opened. The pilot handed me a small package. He said, "You'll probably want to open this before you leave." When I opened that package, inside it were the first five printed, beautifully bound copies of the Anuak New Testament. We handed them out to the Anuaks who were there and could read. We will never forget the words of one of the men as he said, "Our hearts, that is livers, are heavy as you go away. But you are leaving behind God's best gift. You have given us his word in our language." There were an additional 1,000 copies in Khartoum, printed and shipped out by the American Bible Society. MAF had flown in to fetch us. We took with us what we could. We had an hour and a half from when we took off until we made our first stop in Malakal. Alone with our thoughts, one side of the heart was heavy, and the other was light with God's joy and peace. I thought of the verse from Isaiah, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee." This was God's promise and our challenge, to trust him for his tomorrow. We had long since learned that God keeps his promises. We were over Malakal now, and would soon be landing. Our hearts were still in Peabor with the Merle and the Anuak, savoring those last moments at the door of the plane. Over and over, their words kept coming back. "You are leaving behind God's best gift. You have given us his word in our language. To God be all glory, honor, and praise forever and ever."